Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Across Ohio, math scores are down, according to the nation's report card. COVID took away classroom instruction for many students during foundational years, and the results can still be felt. States across the country are putting millions of dollars into programs aimed at improving math proficiency. Ohio has spent the last few years putting a lot of money into the new Science of Reading curriculum, including instructional materials and literacy coaches. But does it have to be one or the other? Can we improve math while also improving reading? Joining us now is Heather Peske, president of the National Council on Teacher Quality. Welcome to All Sides, Heather.
Thanks so much, Amy. Great to be here.
So can you tell us, before we dive into math numbers, can you tell us about what the National Council on Teacher Quality does?
Sure. We're a nonprofit organization, and we work with states to try to ensure that all teachers are qualified and effective before they get into classrooms and then supported to be effective once they are in classrooms.
And now, does your group do a lot of work with students like K through 12, or do you mainly look at public schools? Is it a mix between public and private? What's the focus?
Well, I mean, we focus on K-12 public schools, and we focus on working with the states, with districts, and with teacher preparation programs, because those are really the institutions and the people who have the most impact on teacher quality.
So the states who do the licenses, but then also the colleges and universities that are teaching future teachers, that too?
That's right, Amy. That's correct.
Okay. So the nation's report card from the National Center for Education Statistics comes out with numbers on how schools are doing nationwide. The 2024 report card shows Ohio is down in math. Numbers are below pre-COVID math scores. Now, to be fair, a lot of states are in the same place, but we have to ask, how are we going to fix it? And that's where teacher quality comes into the conversation. So, in your opinion, are math scores low because kids are still catching up from the pandemic or because teaching techniques are not keeping up with newer math standards?
Well, Amy, what we know is that across the nation, students lost learning because of the pandemic. And what we also saw in these most recent national results, which we call the Nation's Report Card or the NAEP, we saw in January that some states have bounced back from the pandemic. And in fact, some states are even achieving better rates than before the pandemic. And so Ohio is behind in terms of the recovery for students. And that's a result of the fact that we really need to support teachers more, particularly in math, to have the content knowledge and the skills to be effective in teaching math, especially at the elementary level.
Yeah, I wanted to focus in on that elementary level. So I was reading about, you know, teachers who teach in elementary school. A lot of them, I mean, it depends on the school, depends on the grade, but a lot of them teach all the subjects. So they teach reading, they teach math, they teach science, social studies. They're teaching social and emotional learning. They're teaching how to sit in a circle for circle time. They're doing it all. So it's harder for maybe the teachers in an elementary school level to really have a grasp on every subject. Is that where math kind of like falls by the wayside a little bit?
Yes, Amy, that's insightful. I'm a former fourth grade teacher myself. And first of all, teachers are doing a lot right now. And so we need to make sure that we're supporting them to have the content knowledge they need before they get into classrooms. And then once they're in classrooms, they need to be supported with the high quality curriculum materials and with the professional learning while they're teaching to be able to be effective. But one of the things that we found across the nation and also in Ohio is that teachers, before they get into classrooms, are not getting enough support in their teacher preparation programs to get that content knowledge of mathematics in order to come in and be successful with students.
So if they're not learning it in college, they're learning it on the fly, first year on the job?
Well, that's right. And unfortunately, we know that math content, it just matters so much. Like, you really need to understand, for example, as an elementary teacher, you need to understand not just one half, what one half means, but how to explain to a child and how to really teach them to understand that one half is the same as 0.5. Or you really need to understand the content in order to be able to understand where kids are going wrong or where they're misunderstanding. And we know from surveys that a lot of elementary teachers say that they feel anxious teaching math because they feel anxious about the mathematics. And so we really need to make sure that before they get into classrooms, they are supported to gain that content knowledge themselves.
Back to the numbers for just a minute. There are many people and organizations out there who are not the biggest fans of the nation's report card. They want less focus on testing, more focusing on the child. But these numbers are what we have to work with. What are your thoughts or your organization's thoughts on, I mean, we have to have a way to measure things. So is the nation's report card just the best way we have to do it?
That's right, Amy. The nation's report card, it doesn't take very much time. It's given to a sample of students, a representative sample in each state. And I liken it to measures that like your pediatrician might use. I mean, I'm a parent. When I go into my pediatrician's office with my kids, I need to make sure that my kids are on track in terms of their growth trajectory, in terms of how much they weigh and how tall they are. And so what the NAEP does for us at the national level is it's kind of like that that sort of dipstick to see to what extent students in each state are on track to achieve basic and proficient knowledge and skills in math and in reading. And the reason it's important is because it's the only assessment we have that allows us to compare across states. Otherwise, we have state-based tests, which are also important. But the NAEP really is like this national dipstick or this national report card to see are students in every state on track to get the basic math knowledge and skills that they need in order to be successful. And Amy, the reason why that matters is because math matters so much to students. We know, for example, in all states, and Ohio is especially, this is true in Ohio, we know that stronger math scores lead to stronger college readiness, and we know that eventually strong math scores can even lead to higher earnings for students. So if we want Ohio students to be successful, we really need to better prepare and support elementary math teachers in their math instruction.
Now, everyone, you know, not that I'm trying to blame the pandemic, but kids were out of school. School was disrupted. Everything changed for a little while. So we did see a drop in scores related to the pandemic. It's taking a long time to climb back up. But I mean, if you could predict what would have happened, were our math scores in trouble prior? I mean, if you just pulled the pandemic out of the equation?
Yes, Amy, math scores have been on the decline. And so certainly the pandemic was difficult for all of us, and particularly for teachers and administrators and students and families. However, we're several years out from the pandemic right now, and it's high time that we focus on the instruction and on teacher preparation and support for teachers to be effective in teaching students math. It's just we cannot really just continue to focus backwards on the pandemic. We really need to focus on the quality of instruction, the quality of teacher preparation, and ultimately on the effectiveness of teachers in being successful or unsuccessful with students in the elementary levels.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about math scores for students, and particularly elementary students in Ohio, with Heather Piskey, president of the National Council on Teacher Quality. I mentioned earlier that Ohio has spent the last few years putting a lot of money into the new Science of Reading curriculum. There's lots of instructional materials, there's new goals, new standards, there's literacy coaches, there's money for that as well. Does it have to be one or the other? Can we improve math while also improving reading?
Yes, Amy, we can certainly improve math while also improving reading. And I mean, sometimes I joke that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And these things are both quite interrelated. At the elementary level, we know that actually math scores really help predict how well students will do in reading. They're totally interconnected. And certainly teachers need to be supported. So if we need to use high quality curriculum materials, Ohio has invested a lot of money to the credit of the state legislature and the governor. They've invested a lot of money in teacher professional development and also in giving districts funds to adopt and use high quality curriculum materials in reading. And Ohio really needs to take the same approach in terms of math. So certainly this is something that should be thoughtful, deliberate, and teachers should be well supported. And we really need to focus in Ohio on both reading and also on elementary math.
Now, Ohio, I mean, didn't do horribly in elementary math. I would say you didn't give it the lowest rating, right? Where are we at whenever it comes to the teacher quality rating for Ohio for math?
That's right, Amy. So, shifting to our analysis here at the National Council on Teacher Quality, we looked at five different things that states can do to improve math instruction. And overall, we said that Ohio was weak, meaning that the state has a few policies in place across those five policy actions, but there's much more to do. So, for example, one area is that Ohio doesn't presently set really specific, detailed standards in math for what teacher preparation programs should be doing before people get into the classroom. Similarly, Ohio right now doesn't require districts to select high-quality math curricula and doesn't provide professional learning support for teachers to sustain effective math instruction. So again, Ohio's made these significant investments in reading and improving literacy, and we would just love to see Ohio continue to do those kinds of investments, but to do so on the math side.
Ohio always likes to compare itself to our neighbors, you know, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Michigan. Is Ohio, I mean, are there, I guess there's a lot of states that you rated as weak in math when it comes to the teaching aspect, right?
We did rate a lot of states weak, particularly because, in fact, Amy, only one state across the nation is actually using these five core actions to improve math instruction across all five of these core actions. And that state happens to be Alabama, where they have focused through new legislation and new investments on the part of the state and requirements for supporting teachers and using high-quality curriculum materials, along with a very strong reading, I'm sorry, a very strong math licensure test, so that teachers have to demonstrate they have the content knowledge and the skills before they get their license and before they get into classrooms. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to say that Ohio is not alone in having opportunities to improve and to make more progress when it comes to elementary math instruction.
What happened in Alabama that they were the only state that's improving in all five areas? Did this someone in their legislature decide to focus in on math?
Well, it's a great question. I think it's a combination of the state chief, the state superintendent Eric Mackey, who is a former teacher, who was a former science teacher, who was seeing his students come in with really low math skills and had to remediate them. He taught chemistry. And so that's first where some of his interest came from. And then once he became the state chief, he worked with the legislature, along with an advocacy organization called A Plus Alabama, to really design and get legislation passed that would allow the state to set specific requirements for teachers, specific requirements for districts. And then they've also invested funds in supporting teachers both before and after they get into classrooms to have access to the knowledge and skills that they need.
Are you hearing from teachers when you talk about the idea of teacher quality, especially at the elementary level, that because we're going to talk about this in the next segment when we talk more about math anxiety, but it used to be math, I don't know how many years ago, we'll just make up a number, but math 20 years ago was about memorization. The more things you could memorize, the more formulas you knew, and you could just spit it out as fast as possible, and then you were good at math. But now there's a lot more focus. I have kids in elementary school. There's a lot more focus on understanding the why and the how of math rather than just memorizing your times tables. Is that why math is harder to teach?
I think we would emphasize that there needs to be a balance between what we're calling conceptual understanding of math and procedural understanding. And so certainly kids still need skills to be able to do things like, add multi-digit numbers or recognize the meaning of three-fourths. And at the same time, they really need to understand the concepts behind that. And so there are these four core content topics that we've identified based on the research and based on advisors in elementary math. And those four content topics include numbers and operations, algebraic thinking, geometry and measurement, and data analysis and probability. And so within those four core content topics, there's knowledge that teachers really need in order to be able to understand how to well teach students. Especially because math is a discipline that grows over time. What you learn in fourth grade in terms of fractions, for example, corresponds to what you learn in seventh grade when you're talking about proportional reasoning. So teachers really need to understand the core content of math in order to be successful in teaching it.
I guess I wanted to end on, do you, I know you focus on all of the states in the United States. You're the National Council on Teacher Quality, but do you know if, I mean, anecdotally, is the United States overall bad at math compared to other countries?
Well, certainly, Amy, international assessments show that we lag behind other countries when it comes to our students' math performance. But I don't like to use this as an excuse because I'm hopeful and optimistic that knowing how valuable and important math is to us as a nation, that we can make stronger investments in improving math, especially at the elementary level.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. That was Heather Piskey, President of the National Council on Teacher Quality. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Amy. Take care.
And coming up, we're going to talk about math anxiety. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. In the past, elementary school math was taught with an emphasis on memorization. The more you could memorize and the faster you could solve the problems, the better. But in recent years, the focus has shifted. Knowing the formulas and procedures in math is important, but also understanding the reasons behind those concepts is being emphasized. And a better understanding leads to more confidence for both the math student and the math teacher. According to one study, more than 90% of adults say they have experienced at least some math anxiety in their life. Teachers suffer from math anxiety as much as you and me. This is especially true for elementary school teachers who are teaching multiple subjects and may not have a specialization in math instruction. Joining us to talk more about math anxiety is Gerardo Ramirez, professor of educational psychology at Ball State University. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So earlier in the show, we talked about some lackluster scores in elementary math for Ohio and a teacher quality rating of weak when it comes to teaching teachers how to teach math. So when we look at the problem and possible solutions, we kept coming across articles over and over again that talked about math anxiety. So that's how we were led to you. How do you define math anxiety? Because I'm guessing it's more than simply not liking math class.
Yes, exactly. I think the better beginning question here is, what is anxiety? You know, anxiety is something that kicks in when you anticipate something going wrong, for instance, not when you're actually in danger, but rather when you think you might be. It's a feeling of tension or nervousness or dread about an anticipated future threat. Oftentimes, this anticipated future threat is unknown or unclear or invisible. So math anxiety is just that. It's a fear of an anticipated future threat that's unknown, but in regards to math situations specifically.
And do you find, I mean, I don't know if you've studied both students and teachers, the young and old, do you find that it's more because, you know, math, there's usually a right or wrong answer, and it's just the worry, the anticipation of getting it all wrong?
It's more about the worry or anticipation of disappointing the people you care about. So oftentimes it's your parents, your teachers. It's about a worry that you may not be equipped to deal with schooling. But for a lot of young kids, it can be about just coming home and a lot of kids want to feel that they're smart, that their parents think they're competent. And it's a worry about disappointing them oftentimes.
Yeah. So looking especially at elementary school teachers, we talked earlier in the show about teacher quality and how not just in Ohio, but across the country, there colleges and universities need to do a better job of teaching teachers how to teach math so that the teacher themselves does not have as much math anxiety because the student can feel that. Do you agree with that, that if the teacher has anxiety, then the students will have trouble learning?
I think that students look at adults to understand how they should feel about things. And if the adults around them are communicating that math is something to fear, they're going to see that as an appropriate response to mathematics. And so I think we communicate that through the way we display our emotions, the way we handle challenges. I think kids want to understand how to think about the world and how to think about math, and they naturally are going to look at adults to figure that out.
What do you think are some of the root causes of math anxiety in teachers? Do you think it stems back to them being in school, or do you think it's just a worry about all the standardized tests? I don't know.
We still don't know that for sure. I think there's a lot of different answers to that, but you know, a lot of times what people will tell us in qualitative research is they'll say that, yeah, when they were asked to solve problems in the front of the class, they got something wrong, people laughed at them. Other reports sort of show that it's a parent who was really harsh with them during homework, for instance. We don't know exactly where it's coming from, but we do know it's very common.
I read that math anxiety levels drop in teachers when you're studying it in middle school and high school, because those teachers specialize in math. Sometimes it's the only subject they teach, but elementary educators have to know a little bit, I guess, or a lot about everything. Do you see that? Whenever you study math anxiety in teachers, is it more elementary than middle and high school?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Elementary education teachers are very general. A lot of times people will actually go into elementary education precisely to avoid other majors that have more intensive math requirements. Now, that's, of course, a problem because they actually have to teach early math. And so, yeah, it can be a major problem, particularly in early elementary education. And that's why it's so important that we may not be able to cure math anxiety, or we may not know how to get rid of it right now, but we at least want to model appropriate ways of dealing with it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about math anxiety with Gerardo Ramirez, professor of educational psychology at Ball State University. So let's talk about those models a little bit. We don't know how to cure math anxiety, but how do we improve it? How do we make it better? How do we lessen it a little?
Yeah, so oftentimes it's about having a really solid foundation in some of the things that students are exposed to in terms of math instruction. So some kids are really just pushed forward before they're ready to tackle more abstract concepts. So they're expected to do multi-step problems or word problems, but they're still shaky in some basics, like what is the equal sign? A lot of people in our society think the equal sign means the conclusion to a story, for instance. They don't understand what the equal sign represents, or how to break numbers apart, or how do fractions work. I think making sure the foundation is there is really the key thing here, so that it doesn't feel confusing or overwhelming later on. Besides that, though, I do think that we want to create opportunities for students to feel efficacious with math. Oftentimes, if they're struggling, they just continue struggling. So math is this thing that they associate with feeling stupid or feeling incompetent. And we really just want them to feel like, no, there's a lot of opportunities to feel successful. And so I always encourage teachers to, if your students are struggling and you've given them feedback on a worksheet, have them redo that worksheet at a later time so they can see how they've grown in their math competence. Because if we're just constantly giving students new opportunities, then they're just always feeling shaky. We want to make them feel efficacious. Oh, fundamentally, what we want to do is change the story the students are telling about themselves with regards to math. A lot of students will say, I just don't get this, or I'm not a math person, or I've always been bad at math. And that's more than frustrating. That's a story they're telling about their identity. And one way to change the story is to give them different experiences that challenge that story, that make them feel successful, so they can change how they believe about themselves and about what math is.
What can parents do at home to help with that too? Because the phrase you just said is something I could hear hundreds and hundreds of parents saying at home, where they're like sitting down to try to help their third grader with math, and the parent says, "Oh, I'm not good at math." So then the kid takes that on too.
Yeah, that's that particular comment is it's tricky, right? Because on the one hand, we don't want to make students feel that math is something that's generally scary and even adults can't handle it. At the same time, what we tend to do in a lot of the literature is we jump to the conclusion that we should be giving people growth mindset feedback. So a growth mindset is the idea that you can grow your competence if you work hard. And that can actually be very invalidating to kids. If my son is struggling with a math problem, and if I say to him, just keep working hard and you'll get it, that just, it doesn't, you're not getting the issue as a parent if you keep saying that. Our society is in love with growth mindset right now, but I find it very invalidating. I think a better approach that toes that line is if a child's coming to you and saying, look, I hate math, I'm never going to get this, you can validate that and say, yeah, math is freaking hard. I hate it too, you know? Why? Because it sometimes makes me feel stupid, and it is tough. And it makes sense you'd feel that way. Now let's take a breath and let's think through this, because sometimes hard things are going to help you to learn better, but we need to really feel okay with grappling with these problems. So we want to validate that, yes, it is hard. It is confusing. And I think sometimes we're just too quick to jump into a growth mindset. I think the last controversial point I'll make about this is that a lot of times, you know, it's we demonize what's called a fixed mindset. In other words, we demonize calling kids smart, but I just don't believe that. And I think a lot of people are starting to change their attitude about that. We say that we shouldn't call kids smart, but I disagree. I think especially in regards to math, people need to feel they're smart. And sometimes that happens through praise. That happens through parents noticing, helping students to their kids to notice, look, you were smart in this situation. Last week you struggled with this, but now look, you've done so much better. You're getting smarter, you know? And I don't agree with this idea that you simply have to give growth mindset feedback. You can praise kids for their smarts, and kids want to feel smart, but you have to do it in a responsible way that ultimately turns back their attention to the effort they invested to change that.
Yeah, I can tell a personal anecdote related to elementary math recently. My second grader, I found out that in the way that they were teaching math for these second graders in particular, they didn't want them to like carry the one when they were doing a problem. They wanted them to think of all of the math equations by getting to the nearest 10 so that you could do more in your head, right? And I did not understand that because I grew up in a carry the one school district, I guess. And I was trying to help my kid with the math homework, and she kept telling me, we're not allowed to do it that way. We're not allowed to do it that way. And I didn't understand a different way of doing it. So I emailed the teacher, and she did a video of how she taught the lesson to the students and sent it to all the parents. And it helped so much. It was a 2-minute video of her explaining it to me. And I felt so much better, and I got all this confidence with helping my second grader with her second grade math. So sometimes it's just a matter of taking the time to learn something new. Is that right?
Yeah. I think in that kind of situation, what I love about that is that you as a parent show that you're still curious and you're still growing, right? And that's a great lesson for your child to have witnessed, you know? And I think a lot of times with a lot of new math initiatives, they may be great, but if the parent doesn't understand them, then it just causes a lot of conflict. There's a great anecdote, of course, about that in that movie, The Incredibles, with their dad, you know, is really
why did they change math?
Exactly, right. Yeah. I mean, parents want to help, and if kids are seeing their own parents frustrated, then what hope do they have, right? So I think I really love that example of the teacher sending out a video just quickly outlining how to do it.
Yeah, but it is interesting because the way math is taught, I feel, has changed, I guess, in the past 30 years, because that was completely new to me. I understand it now, and I do understand how it is easier to round to a 10. I do. But there's these new standards. So I can also understand how a veteran teacher could develop math anxiety if they had to change the way they taught math. Is that something that happens?
Oh, for sure. I mean, teachers are constantly being inundated with new fads in education. You know, there's and I'm not saying that the approach to thinking deeply about math as a fad per se, but there's a lot of fads that are constantly going on. And frankly, teachers are exhausted with all this innovation that they're constantly being pushed to do. And I think a lot of our kids are suffering because of that. Teachers really need the time and expertise to develop good lessons. And in the US, we just don't value giving them that time to lesson plan, for instance.
Yeah, in the previous segment, I had asked if we were talking about like national statistics and how Ohio fit within the rest of the country when it came to math. But I also asked how the United States was doing compared to other countries. Have you looked at, do other countries have less math anxiety than the United States? Do you know that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me answer it directly, then give you a little bit more of a complex answer. The short answer is no, they don't have less math anxiety.
Okay.
Now, that's confusing to a lot of people because they'll say, well, wait a minute, aren't other countries doing much better in math than we are? Like, yes, countries like Singapore and Japan are doing much better at math, so they have lower math anxiety, right? That's logical if you believe that competence is what leads to math anxiety, but that's not the case. Math anxiety can exist even when a student is feeling quite comp, even when a student performs really well. And that's because it's a feeling. And a lot of times, feelings don't always match reality. So in Japan and some of these East Asian countries, for instance, they also report high, in fact, higher levels of math anxiety, but it's not the same for the same reason that we see in the US. In a lot of those countries, it can be out of a shame to let down their family. It can be for different reasons. It can be that everyone's just doing so well, so it just feels like you can't catch up. In the US, it's more identity based than it is in some of these East Asian countries. So yeah, no, other countries are doing better than we are in math, but they actually have more math anxiety, but for different reasons.
Interesting. So, would you say that math anxiety is not directly contributing to the country's lower math scores? It's just a part of it?
Well, I think it has a it plays a contribution. So do other things, of course. And I think it definitely prevents people from doing better. I think its main impact happens in the situations that lead up to those math performance situations. So a lot of what we find is that math anxiety exerts its biggest destructive effects, not during math testing, but rather the time that leads up to it. So a lot of times kids freak out as they're about to start a test because they don't know how they're going to do. When they have a choice, say in high school or college, to take math, a lot of times they avoid it. One of the best accounts for why math anxiety becomes worse is because people are just avoiding opportunities to do math. And the more you avoid it, the worse you become at executing it when you need it.
Do you think that the education rift from COVID-19, you know, how we're still trying to catch up from the learning losses from the pandemic, did that impact math anxiety at all, or was it there back in 2018?
I think it's always been there. It's always been there. It's not going to go away. Anytime you feel unclear or uncertain about an anticipated threat, you're going to experience anxiety. And if it's that anticipated threat is related to math, you're going to experience math anxiety.
All right. Well, we talked a little bit, just to end on, we talked a little bit about how we can model behavior. Parents can. What's another thing that can be done to help the teachers? Why do they feel the need to push the student forward? Is it because of the tests? Is it because of their expectations? Are we needing to like lean on, I don't know if it's the district's principals or if it's the state that needs to just relax a little bit and help teachers catch everybody up?
Yeah, it's just a complicated issue because schools rely on funding, and that funding is derived from standardized testing. And so schools are naturally going to push for standardized testing, which stinks for the teacher because the teacher wants to teach, and now they have to help students to catch up to these standardized tests. So it's the whole system is just really messed up. So yeah, I mean, I would say let's give teachers a break from standardized tests so that they can become strong teachers, and then veteran teachers could be perhaps held asked to do these standardized tests, but we really need to give more novice teachers the opportunity to catch up and develop even more expertise and feel comfortable with math. It's hard to teach math when you're trying to both teach it for learning and teach it for performance on these standardized tests.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. You've been listening to Gerardo Ramirez, professor of educational psychology at Ball State University. Thank you for joining us today.
Sure.
And coming up, we're going to hear how Ohio's largest school district is trying to solve that math scores equation. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Numbers can only show us a fraction of what's happening within the classroom, especially when it comes to math. And with major events like the pandemic, the increase of social media among kids, and the full transition to tech within classrooms, the elementary landscape looks significantly different than several years ago. Are kids not picking up math concepts as they have in the past, or do we need to be looking at them from a different angle? Joining us now is Joe Hernan, Director of Mathematics Innovation and Technology for Columbus City Schools. Welcome to All Sides, Joe.
Amy, thanks for having me today.
I had a few math puns there in my intro, so I hope you can bear with me for those. But when I say, do we need to look at math from a different angle, what do you feel in your experience with Columbus City Schools over the past few years, you know, including the pandemic? What are your observations when it comes to elementary school math teachers and students and how things are going with math at an elementary level?
Well, certainly bear in mind the pandemic had huge ripple effects. You know, I think our students are really coming in with a Swiss cheese of knowledge, if you will. So our students, you know, they have different gaps and all of them are sort of in different places. So this certainly poses a unique challenge our educators face in trying to support them, because now more than ever, we have fewer students that are at typical grade level, if you will. So taking an approach of understanding where our students currently are while maintaining high expectations of our grade level standards and meeting them and kind of bridging that gap is really, I see the fundamental challenge we are facing here, not only in Columbus City Schools, but really across the nation.
Now, were we having problems with math scores, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019, before the pandemic, and the pandemic just kind of like blew up the whole thing of any progress we were trying to make? Or are the numbers we're seeing now still because of the pandemic?
Well, I think we were always, you know, trying to make strides with mathematics. I don't think we were ever in an ideal state in our country around how we're approaching mathematics as in general. I think the pandemic certainly exacerbated the issue. And now it's just now more pronounced more than ever. Yeah, I think it really comes down to, you know, how we are approaching math, how we view math, what is math really? And, you know, oftentimes it's really seen as a gatekeeper, and we send messages to students around who math is for and who it's not for. I don't know if you've ever heard this, or if anybody has ever said this to you, but have you ever heard of this idea of like, I'm a math person or I'm not a math person?
Yeah. When does that get decided, I guess?
Right. I mean, there's so many people that that hear this message, and, you know, I can kind of cop out of this because I'm not a math person. There's like this inherent math gene, if you will. And if I don't have that gene, I'm not going to be successful in math. I think this premise goes back well before the pandemic. This isn't a new, phenomenon. And I think we really need to challenge this premise. Math is more than just, numbers and computations. It's problem solving. It's reasoning the world around you. I would venture to guess that all of our listeners have faced a problem and they've had to use logic and reason and deduction to help them solve it. That's mathematical thinking, right? I'd venture to guess that our youngest learners come in with these skills and some level of knowledge around reasoning with the world around them. But we don't necessarily think of math in that manner, and we don't often bring those ideas to the forefront and lift our students up as mathematicians. Oftentimes, it is very, very procedural. It is very heavy knowledge based. Bridging that gap between those procedures and the concepts and bringing these skills in and centering the student so that they are the true controllers of the work happening in the classroom. I think that is where we fall short as a system, as a nation, as we're approaching math. And I think that contributes to some of the scores that we are seeing and some of the declines that we're seeing.
So, do you feel like this is something, what you just described, does it need to be taken care of at a national level, or is it something that, like Columbus City Schools, your district, can invest in teachers and help them see a different way of looking at math and explaining it to students so that every student in their classroom can be a math person?
Right. Yeah, I think, well, we're certainly in Columbus City Schools attempting to push our educators' beliefs, whether they are, a lot of times this may be an unconscious belief, around what a student is capable of achieving. A lot of times our educators aren't seeing themselves as math people. So we need to sort of push on this because it's more than just an achievement gap. We have a belief gap when it comes to math. So pushing on those beliefs and sort of centering around what everybody brings to the table. All of our educators, all of our students, those that are in the classroom. Everybody brings unique mathematical brilliance to the classroom. Everybody has something to contribute. So, this has been a message in Columbus City Schools that we've been pushing. It's been sort of a central theme in all that we're doing with our professional development, with our educators, both our teachers and our principals. We've been running, community engagement campaigns that are centered around this idea to sort of shift the paradigm. So I think, when we're talking about is this something within our control? I think it's something within our control because really we're a people system and systems are made up of individuals. If we can start shifting individuals' beliefs around this, we can certainly make progress within our system in Columbus City Schools. And hopefully that continues to grow and we continue to, just push and be reflective on how we are impacting instruction and our student outcomes, based off of our beliefs and our belief system.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about math scores and math teaching with Joe Hernan, Director of Mathematics, Innovation, and Technology for Columbus City Schools. Earlier in the show, we talked with the National Council on Teacher Quality, and they say that Ohio has done well in teacher preparation and licensure, but has not made significant investments in the professional learning to improve math instruction. So therefore, they rated Ohio weak in math teacher quality. Now, Ohio has spent the last few years putting a lot of money into what Ohio calls the new science of reading curriculum. instructional materials, curriculum, literacy coaches were hired. But does it have to be one or the other? I mean, we have science of reading, but can we improve reading and improve math at the same time? Or is there just not enough money to go around?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Amy. And all of those efforts around the science of reading are much needed, right? Mm-hmm. We needed to focus that intention, those resources, that time around leveling up our educators and the science of reading. And your question, this is what we grapple with every day, because not only is it a financial resource commitment, it's a time commitment. You know, how many hours do we have in the day to focus on both of these heavy topics? So from Columbus City Schools approach, we are we're really trying to leverage and integrate as much as possible our resources, our professional development approach. We collaborate really closely within our Department of Curriculum and Instruction, along with our school leaders, to ensure that we are meeting both of these needs, because we certainly, it does feel like math is almost taken the back seat, certainly with elementary school, over the past couple of years due to the heavy emphasis on the science of reading.
Yeah, and are you working toward helping math teachers work with students, especially at the elementary level? Because that's something we also discussed earlier in the show, is that elementary teachers don't feel as strongly suited to teach math as maybe, you know, a middle school or high school teacher decides to specialize in math. But elementary teachers kind of know a little bit about a lot of subjects and have to teach all the subjects. So are you finding that it's elementary teachers yeah. are struggling to even teach math as math concepts change a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yes, we are seeing that. Previously, over the past couple of years, we've really tried to leverage like job embedded learning opportunities for our elementary teachers. And those types of learning opportunities are great. However, there's a capacity issue, especially with Columbus City Schools, meeting the needs across 77 elementary schools. That becomes a lot. So just sheer, volume, that becomes difficult to sustain that job embedded and make sure that we're continuing to move folks forward in that manner. I'll say this upcoming school year, we have multiple professional development days dedicated to math, and a lot of that time is going to be focusing in on developing content knowledge of our elementary school teachers, so that they really have an opportunity to grapple with and understand the flow or the progression of learning that occurs within the topic of math. So that, if I am teaching second grade math, I'm having a really solid understanding of our curriculum and where students are coming from kindergarten and first grade, and where they're going to be heading to third, fourth, fifth grade. And by knowing that, I can now better strategize for when those students come in with that Swiss cheese of understanding different topics within math, how to best intervene in real time to help them, bridge gaps sooner rather than, these issues being persistent and ongoing, and then the gap, builds further. We are closing those gaps in real time.
Now, unfortunately, we only have 2 minutes left, but I'm going to ask you this question. We all talk about the report cards. We hear the numbers for how we're doing in math scores. But then also, our previous guest said that in order to reduce math anxiety, we need to not push students forward before they're ready. How do you balance that of being able to achieve the scores you need, but not push students forward too fast in math?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was saying previously around belief gaps. I think when we're talking about when students are ready to move forward, I think that can be kind of subjective. And I think there's different ways we can move students forward while not focusing on remediation, but more so focusing on accelerating their understanding. And that comes through that like just-in-time intervention that I was sort of talking about before, where we're maintaining that grade level expectation, but we're meeting students and their needs and filling those gaps as we are going. So I kind of, you know, I grapple with that often, like how do we truly measure when it's appropriate to move forward? When do we need to stop and slow down? I think that can be highly subjective. I don't think that there's a nice mathematical you know, algorithm that tells you that. I think that requires, you know, a very personalized approach based on the students that are in the classroom.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Joe Hernan, Director of Mathematics, Innovation and Technology for Columbus City Schools. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thank you, Amy.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.